We are going to discuss on what are the various risks in the equity market and where are we headed as an economy. Today, we will be discussing the various risks associated with equity market and where we might be headed as an economy. The equity market can be a great way to invest and grow your wealth over time. However, it also comes with various risks that investors should be aware of. The global economy has been through a tumultuous time over the past few years. However, there are some positive signs of recovery. Let's discuss this in detail. What are the various risks in equity market? With the panel of extreme experts in our fee in the market, we have Mr. Shankar Sharma, founder G Quant Investec, a global fintech and asset management company. Mr. Shankar Sharma has been called the alchemist of Dalal Street. He has been widely quoted in the Wall Street Journal, CNBC, Financial Times, and has featured on shows like The Mind of the Market on NDTV Profit. In addition to being a guest on several shows on finance and markets on several channels in India and abroad. Then we have Mr. Anup Maheshwari, co-founder and chief investment officer at IIFL Asset Management. Mr. Anup Maheshwari has over 24 years of work experience in financial service sector. Prior to joining IIFL Asset Management Limited, he has been associated with DSP Investment Managers Private Limited for over 11 years as an executive vice president and chief investment officer. Then we have Mr. Akhil Chaturvedi, Director and Chief Business Officer at Motilal Oswal AMC. Wide experience of over 22 years in financial service industry in India. Presently working with Motilal AMC as CBO, overseeing sales and operations, products and business development. Now I'll be handing over the mic to Mr. Vikas, who will in turn be handing over the mic to the moderator. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, Pragya. Hello, Shankar ji, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear, Vikas. How are you?
Great. All well, sir. Thank you so much for accepting our request and taking the time out from our for our investors.
No problem.
Anup ji, can you hear me?
Yes, absolutely. I can hear you.
Yeah, hi. How are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
Great. Hi, Akhil. How are you doing?
Yeah, hi, Vikas. Hi.
Yeah. So
all
actually,
good.
you know, Bharat ji was supposed to join, but there are some other commitments which came up in the last minute. Some emergency, so he has to rush to his home. So he could not manage to join, but we thought nevertheless, show must go on. And thank you, gentlemen, all of you for accepting our request. And you know, I take this opportunity to thank our media partner ET Markets for giving us an opportunity to reach out to more number of people. As we speak, there are 2,500 people watching this show, and all of them are keen to read your mind. So I thought, who would be the you know. Because the panel is so respected and so knowledgeable, I thought I'll get somebody better than me in terms of experience to moderate this. And then I reached out to Akhil mentioning that can you moderate the session for us so that more and more insight should you know go to our investor community. So Akhil, without any further ado, over to you. I would request you to moderate the session and I'll come in between. And we have a great mind sitting there, Mr. Anup Maheshwari and Mr. Shankar Sharma ji. Over to you, Akhil. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Vikas, for the opportunity. Great talking to you, Shankar, once again. I think less than a month we met in Dubai. We'll miss Bharat Shah. Hi, Anup. Pleasure talking to both of
Yes,
you once
correct.
again. So,
Thank you.
last session, but not the least, I think in a lot of ways we'll try to summarize all the discussion what have happened in the last 2 days. And because I've been watching some of the sessions on and off. So very interesting lineup and good knowledge. So great work done. This session, the subject line is risk and understanding all the risks. So Vikas has very conveniently given all the good topics and the opportunities and bull markets and everything to others. And he has left all the risk side or understanding what can go wrong to all of us. So, but we'll try to convert this into opportunity again. So I think when it comes to equity markets, there are broadly three or four risks we always talk about. There are macro risk and there are micro risks. So we can start from the macro risk first, then we can get into the micros. And I've chosen to then go into equities and sectors. And so we will cover all of those things as well for the audience. But starting with just yesterday we've got the estimates from IMF in terms of the outlook for the Indian economy for FY24, which is at 5.9%. But IMF tends to be fairly conservative, and India tends to outperform those estimates. Indian Reserve Bank still talks about 6.97%. So we'll understand the economic outlook first, because everything else is connected with the overall economic outlook for the next 1 year. So maybe starting, Shankar sir, if we could have your thoughts on how you are understanding the data from various rating agencies. You also obviously know a lot what is happening outside of India and how outside world looks at India. So some perspective on FY24 economic outlook according to you, and then you know we'll take thoughts from Anup as well. Over to you, sir.
Right. Thanks, Akhil. So first and foremost, we must be, and thanks Vikas for having me, and great to connect with you, Anup. Anup has been a very, very good friend and one of the most intelligent minds in the street by far. So it's a privilege to be back again on the same forum as Anup. So to answer your question, Akhil, my take is this on broadly on forecasts. Whether it is IMF or RBI, Ministry of Finance, or any other agency for that matter, I pay virtually no attention to all of this. I've never paid any attention to all of this, because a lot of this analysis, first of all, is conducted by human beings, not conducted by gods. And they're as prone to making severe mistakes as any of us are, right? We tend to assume that somebody sitting in RBI or MOF or IMF or World Bank, they have some greater data on which they can base their opinions. Reality, we more or less get the same data that they get. So that is one. Second, and even more important, is that more often than not, these forecasts will be biased towards being overestimates rather than underestimates, because there is also a political underpinning to every forecast that an agency makes, whether RBI or even the IMF. So if the IMF were to come up with a number of 4.5, all hell would break loose. Okay. And God forbid if the RBI were to do the same, you know, I don't know then what would happen to the MPC's stance of being a little hawkish and all that, you see. So, you know, you have to understand that forecasts by these agencies are almost always tainted by a lot of biases. And which is, again, this forum is about risk. Right, understanding risk. So understand the risks in trusting any of these forecasts, and that's for very, very important for investors to understand that none of this is something which is very neutral in its approach. And getting neutral research itself is a big challenge in today's world, because sell side firms are in the business of, again, overestimating rather than underestimating. Asset managers in the same boat. IMF, RBI, everybody is, they're going to be tilted more towards overestimation rather than underestimation, which is always a risk. Or for that matter, rating agency. My sense is the 6% or the 7% or 6.5% or even 5.75%, I think will be a reach for the Indian economy based on even the last data print that came out, which was a December data print. If you compare December's numbers to the previous December, which was 2021, that I think in the last 3 years since COVID is probably the only like-for-like comparison we can have of a fairly normal December 21 quarter and a fairly normal December 22 quarter. All other preceding quarters have been, again, problematic because, you know, there was obviously COVID, then shutdowns, then again second waves and all that. That data print was not very inspiring. It was not very inspiring at all. And that is, I think, a good canary in the coal mine, that the numbers that all our agencies are forecasting may well be probably at least 1% off. It doesn't mean doomsday. Understand this. I will take 5% any day or 4.5% any day, in which in the world today where everybody's struggling for growth, it is just that we've gotten used to numbers historically which are more like, you know, 7% being 6.5, 7 being about par for the course. In that context, please, let's not be too pessimistic with these numbers, even if we get a 4.5% data print next year. I think it's more realistic to assume a 4.5 or 5% than 5.75, 6, 6.5%. And again, I come back to my point. It doesn't mean that you do not buy stocks. Again, let me not let me clarify for everybody's purposes that macro data doesn't necessarily mean that all is sunk and all is lost. And if you are 1% slower on GDP growth rate, then nothing to buy. India is a fantastic market in terms of growth opportunities. And before I let Anoop get the get the mic, I just had a meeting just like a couple of hours before this call with a company just selling in the eastern part of India. I'll not mention what it sells, but never mind. You know, the turnover that they do just selling in West Bengal and neighboring areas, 4,000 crores.
Wow.
I mean, this is the kind of number that, you know, decent sized companies in the UAE don't get, or for that matter, Saudi don't get. That's a kind of size that India still offers, irrespective of headline GDP growth numbers. So to answer your question, I think that the numbers might be a little disappointing. But I think that still does not mean that you don't go out and buy stocks. I'm still very, very optimistic on the outlook for the market.
No, no, we are talking to you. So we'll come to that part once again. But just before I get Anoop inside, Shankar, let's say broadly.
You got that, Akhil? Are you there? Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah, I can hear you. Am I audible?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Sir, can you hear me, Shankar? Can you hear me? Anoop, can you hear me?
I can hear you, Akhil. I think there's a problem with Shankar's
connection. I think he has an audio problem. So let us have your views.
Yeah, it's just gone off for a bit. Akhil. Well, the time Shankar comes back, I'll probably just give you a quick view on that. I sort of partly agree with Shankar in terms of the fact that, you know, the GDP print per se doesn't really influence our view on markets or even stocks. But just optically, what will likely happen is after that 4.7% that he was mentioning for December quarter, in this quarter, we have the reverse effect of a low base of Jan, Feb, March. Hey, hi, Shankar, you're back on.
Yes, yes.
I'm back. Audible?
Okay.
Yeah. Right. Akhil, you want to pass it back to Shankar or should I start off?
No, sir. Go up. Please carry on. Please carry on.
Okay. Actually, maybe I'll just preface it. Shankar was very kind with his words. We've learned a lot from Shankar and Devina, frankly, in the course of our career. So I think whatever good things you have to say about us is you should take some credit for that. But just coming to that point on GDP growth, I was just echoing your view, Shankar, that it doesn't really matter from a market standpoint per se. Just mathematically, for whatever it's worth, the first quarter will show a higher growth rate because of a low base of the previous quarter. Again, it was COVID affected. So that will alter the number for the year. So while second, third and fourth quarter will probably be weak prints, but the first quarter base effect will play through. So you probably end up in the 5-5.5% range because the first quarter number will be like 7% just because of base effect. So it'd be an overstated number. It's actually not growing at 7% by any stretch, but it's more because of the base of last year. But again, as I said, it doesn't really matter in the long run. I think what really matters finally is corporate earnings. That's what you're more interested in. And there are enough companies and more that, are capable of delivering good earnings. You know, we were looking at a very interesting, just to Shankar's point on how stocks are totally a different story compared to all to GDP trends. You know, it was really interesting. We saw some data. Actually, we did this analysis of over the last 20 years. We wanted to see, that's a fairly long period of GDP growth taken into account. And you've seen growth across China, India, other markets as well. But when you look at how many companies were able to create shareholder value or compound at 20% or more in dollar terms, we wanted to see that number. That is real value, and that's what we all invest for. And we took four markets. We took India, the US, China, Japan being fairly prominent markets, and just wanted to compare out of the top 500 companies listed in each of these markets, how many companies managed to deliver a 20% or higher dollar CAGR in that period of time, last 20 years. We took last 20 and we took last 10 years also. In the last 20 years, India's had 154 out of 500 companies deliver a 20% dollar return. The US has had 32 out of the S&P 500. China had 8 and Japan had 2 names. So India's had US plus China plus Japan multiplied by 3 number times the number of companies that have been able to deliver dollar compounding. And that sort of speaks more about the underlying earnings growth that they've been able to deliver, the return on capital, quality of management, etc. So it just, India is such an outlier from a bottom-up stock perspective. That's why it also remains one of those markets where there's still alpha capability that exists, because if you select well out of that, there's a good chance you can deliver alpha. So irrespective of what our GDP conversation would have been in the last 20 years, I think that's the reality is, you know, how many compounders have come out of all of this. And I think that continues to be India's real strong place.
Sure. So I think broadly what we understand, friends, is that it's good to know about what the print is, but be prepared for plus minus. In fact, be conservative in your estimates. But when it comes to stock market investing, it is about bottom-up stock picking. And there are plentiful ideas even in low growth phase and high growth phase both. But connecting to that, now that we are coming to equities only, so so last year, due to the global macro situations globally, more specifically globally, obviously India also gets impacted. Eventually, we are talking about stocks, so we are talking about earnings. And we did see that the earnings for FY23 would be much lower than what the estimates would have been at the beginning of the year, right? So what we see is that I think March 22, we were at 740 EPS, Nifty 50. Now we're looking at 812 for March 23. So, I mean, broad, we are discussing very broad, not getting into company specific. So broadly, we saw that our economy slowed down because of global factors, some local factors. Inflation was also one reason. And then commodity prices being up led to margin pressure, led to PAT growth. This is broadly what we understand. And therefore, markets also have been flattish. In fact, now on 1 year basis, our markets have underperformed big time. I think some of the other markets which were outperforming, we are underperforming, and vice versa is happening. So then coming to earnings broadly, again, not coming to stock specific, I think that will be a different thing. You still have companies which will make money. But what do you see? What worked, what didn't work, and what might work, might not work into the next year? We are in the next, in the current financial year, from earnings perspective.
Is that for Shankar or for me?
Yeah, Anup, maybe you can start and then we can take Shankar.
Okay, so again, you know, the earnings growth percentages over the last 3 years have obviously got very distorted post-COVID initially, at least. You know, if in the March 2020 year, our total corporate profits to GDP was about 2.3%. And in March 22, that rose to 4.3%. There was a full 200 basis points increase. And of that 200 basis points, almost 80% of that came from four sectors, which is commodities, oil and gas, banking, and telecom. And oil and gas and commodities were a fairly significant part of that. You know, out of 1.8% delta, they accounted for 1.1% delta of that. And those are volatile sectors, which is, you know, it's not easy to just extrapolate performance of companies in these sectors. Their earnings could be volatile. So we got a very big base effect increase, which is why we had very strong growth in subsequent years, March 22. March 23 obviously has been more normalized. Commodities have actually pulled back profitability a little bit, which is why you've seen a more modest growth. But financials have made up for it, and you know, financials have done very well. Yeah. So the mix keeps changing. But I think, you know, we'd still operate, you know, the way it always used to work was we would start off with 15% standard estimates of growth, and then during the year, you would probably bring it down or adjust it a little bit. I think we're in that 12 to 15% potential range of profitability over the next couple of years, with financials being a decent part of that. And some of the others, you know, the commodity elements are can exaggerate it or compress it a little bit, which is why we give a range. But I would say 12 to 15% is quite possible on a CAGR basis. Yeah,
more from a 3-year, 5-year perspective, I think.
Over the next couple of years, yes, that's what I would think.
Yeah, yeah. Shankar, can you hear us?
Yes, yes, Shankar? I can hear you absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. So, any thoughts from your side in terms of broad earnings estimate for the current year, and according to you, what worked, what didn't work for the earnings last year?
No, so I mean, I've never been a believer in Nifty or Sensex EPSs and all that, because that's a blend of so many different industries, you know, companies, and we are just throwing a very, very heterogeneous group into making a single easy to swallow number, which, you know, in my view, it results in an absurdity. So I know that's done by the street very often, but I mean, I don't subscribe to that point of view on analysis. My sense is only this, that with the GDP numbers being what they are, larger companies may not be able to deliver big numbers. That broadly, if you ask me, that in terms of the stratification of the market, I think larger companies will be problematic areas from a growth perspective. I mean, just looking at even the IT companies, they are dependent on GDP growth elsewhere. And, you know, I don't think the numbers are going to be anything very, very exciting from that group. Within India itself, you look at more domestic focused companies. I doubt if we'll get big blowout numbers from the larger companies. And my belief remains that you have to start buying the ones that will become large companies 5 years out. You know, in your funnel, basically, you need to have the large companies because, you know, they give you a bit of stability. At least we hope they do. Last 3 months have not been great for big companies offering a stability. But, you know, I mean, usually that's supposed to be the case. But, I mean, like I said, that the smaller ones are just blowing out the lights in terms of growth. They're absolute big, big numbers coming in from smaller companies who are serving regional markets. I mean, I've said this many times, that I don't regard India as a single market anymore, because it's a $3 trillion economy. Each part of India itself is between $500 to $1 trillion in size, which means that you're talking the GDP of UAE or the GDP of Saudi Arabia, I think, is $850 billion. And I think just Maharashtra alone must be around that much, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So, I mean, just think about the sheer size of each khand, if you can call it, of India, each part of India, and companies servicing those markets in their little niches. They have the local knowledge, the like this company that I met today, they were telling me that we know the householders, we know the individuals, you know, they know us, there's a trust in our brand, in fact, they will know us more than a national company that comes down and sets up a shop here, because they will not have the same connect with the consumers, you know, in these little small towns in West Bengal or in Orissa or in Bihar or whatever. So, I mean, for me, the real opportunity is really in finding bottom-up companies. And in India, that has always been a fantastic... India has always been a, let's say...
We lost him again.
Yeah, we are losing him. Manvi, I think... Need to check on this.
Shall we wait for a few seconds?
Can
you hear me?
Yeah, he's going back.
Can you hear me, guys?
Yeah, you're back. You're back.
Okay, sorry, Abby. I don't know what's happening. Maybe I should move to the Wi-Fi. So India has always been a questionable market, if you just look at the macro numbers, because there will be an oil price problem. There's inflation is a permanent problem in India because of supply side, oil price, imported inflation. But bottom up, I mean, you know, as Anoop was saying, and I completely, you know, agree with that, we have lived through that journey of 20 years. In fact, I can go back even 30 years from the time I entered the markets back in 89. It's just a country awash in bottom-up opportunities. So for a minute, if we stop talking a lot of macro and we focus on micros, I think everybody will become significantly rich. I mean, that has been the track record of good Indian investors. And I don't think anything is going to change in the future. It is just an amazing set of bottom-up opportunities. I mean, really speaking, I mean, as a personal investor, I have problems in allocation because I sell something to buy something. And, you know, I'm very loath to sell the stuff I have, in most of the cases anyway, to buy the opportunities that keep coming my way practically every day. So I just think as a fund manager, if you ignore the big macro noise, which will be there for a while to come, I think you will be just fine buying any number of, you can fill a portfolio comfortably of any shape and size in India.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I think when we talk to Ramduji also, he tends to, every time we ask him question on macros, he'll move towards micros and sectors and stocks and earnings. So I completely understand where you're coming from. But since the topic is such, and, you know, I'm asking more from our audience out here and, you know, the typical questions which come, because a lot of investors form their opinions and allocation strategies into equity basis these numbers which get printed on a daily basis. So pardon me for that, but just to get, you know, your expert views, opinions, and you're making relevant points that eventually it is about bottom-up stock picking, sector, stocks, opportunity, like Shankar is talking about the opportunity in West Bengal. So I hope the audience out here is understanding the same thing. But I'll take one last question, because to some extent, this one macro data point also has some impact on valuations of equities, which is the interest rates. Right now, obviously, the inflation has been coming down, and we've seen the first pause, and many other countries have gone into the first pause of the interest rates. But, you know, generally, it's open-ended, just in case the inflation goes up. They have always kept that room open to increase the rates again. So just very quickly, you know, your views on broadly 2-3 quarters of inflation, interest rates, both globally as well as for India. Just your sense and your thoughts, and then we can go to some other topics.
Question to Anoop or to me?
Shankar, sir.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, I have tweeted many times that I believe all this inflation thing is all nonsense anyway. you know, we basically, central banks take credit for something that is a natural outcome of the base effect. So if 100 goes to 120, it's 20% inflation, let's say year on year, and then that goes to 125 through. And, you know, if you wait long enough, the base would have moved to 105, 110. So you're optically, the inflation number will start to look, you know, instead of 20%, it'll come down to 15 and then to 10 and then to 5 because of the base effect. So I just think you have to sit out inflation. I mean, period. That's the way you deal with inflation. Interest rate hikes, particularly in a country like India, I completely militate against, because most of our inflation is imported and local supply constraints. But central bankers go and tighten rates, and then if growth rates slow down, it doesn't necessarily mean that inflation cools off. The cooling off effect is only because the base has shifted, and therefore you're now optically thinking the inflation rates have come down. I mean, in my view, if you want to restore purchasing power, then that 120 needs to go back to 100, because you're going to tell me that, you know, now instead of 130, I made it 125. But hey, that's still a lot higher than what it was 1 year back. So my purchasing power has not been restored. The rate at which I'm losing purchasing power has been lowered. I mean, that's pretty much what it is. But yeah, for me to go back to 100 is when I will say, okay, my dollar or my rupee buys the same goods and services that it used to. Now I'm going to be buying a lot less, but you're saying, hey, it could have been worse. Okay, that's the broad logic, right? So anyway, I think it's all a game of smoke and mirrors, all the central bank tightening and all that. One of the biggest things that we should take away from the episodes of last 12 months is that US Fed is not, you know, a temple of 100% wisdom. You know, we found them napping completely. I think Mr. Powell has not covered himself with glory by saying things like inflation will be, you know, transitory and all that. I mean, those statements come back and haunt you a long time. Which is what I was saying at the beginning, that please don't start trusting central bankers or finance ministers or prime minister or president as if they're some oracles and they know more than we do. You know, let's please. That's the biggest risk, when you start trusting such things as if what they say will pan out exactly as they are saying it will. It will not. More often than not, it will not. Okay. So even in RBI's case, and Mr. Nainan wrote a very good editorial after the recent pause, saying that, you know, should we even, I mean, he was being very diplomatic, But he said, should we even now pay any attention to what these guys say? In effect, that's what he was saying. कि कोई फायदा भी है इनकी बातों को सुनने का कि कभी तो आप हॉकिश कभी डविश होके भी हॉकिश अब ये सब चीजें क्या मतलब हम निकाले क्या या बेसिकली इट्स अ गेम ऑफ तुक्का कि तुक्का लगाओ यार अगर वो हो गया तो हम क्रेडिट ले लेंगे नहीं हुआ तो हम बोलेंगे थोड़ी देर और रुक जाते हैं तो मोटा मोटा इस सब चीज का वेस्ट ऑफ टाइम है बॉस आई मीन रियली स्पीकिंग उनको ही कुछ नहीं मालूम तो हमको हम जैसे लोगों को क्या मालूम चलने वाला है सब चीज के बारे में बेस इफेक्ट इज नाउ किकिंग इन ग्लोबली यू सॉ द डेटा प्रिंट्स ऑन द यूएस इन्फ्लेशन इंडिया में भी वही होने वाला है ब्रॉडली टू क्वार्टर्स आउट आई थिंक वी विल बी ऑल वेरी वेरी ओके ऑन दिस स्मोक एंड मिरर्स गेम ऑफ लोअरिंग इन्फ्लेशन बस उतना ही होने वाला एंड दैट विल बी गुड ऑप्टिकली फॉर यू नो फॉर इक्विटीज आई थिंक I think we are over and done with the bear market or the mini bear market of the last 12 months or so. I think that's behind us 100%.
Absolutely. Some your thoughts, Anup? I think Shankar has covered quite a bit, but any sure. thoughts on?
Interest rates are obviously important for markets. In fact, if you take out all the noise around, God knows how many events that keep happening on a daily basis, most of it is noise. The only two things that really matter from a valuation standpoint is the spread or which is return on equity on the one side, which is what is the profits companies are generating on their net worth and interest rates on the other. And the spread between the two is why a stock market even exists and why market capitalization exists. We're always looking at the spread to take a view in terms of whether valuations are likely to expand or contract. Lower interest rates in a lower interest rate scenario, the same profits are worth more from a market standpoint. In a higher interest rate environment, the same profits become worth less. So you keep looking at the jaw between ROE and interest rates and see whether it's expanding or contracting. I think in the Indian context, again, Shankar mentioned, I don't think inflation really is very high. It's still below the six handle and with even the macro outlook of the being what it is. I think inflation stays under control. And as a result, interest rates also, we're not really counting on any big increase in interest rates from here. The US has been much more volatile on this parameter, obviously, with a long cycle of low interest rates, and now they're paying the price for it and very profligate central bank. But so they will deal with it the way they have to. But I think from an Indian context, we are only interested in the spread between ROE and interest rates. Today, ROE is at 15%, seems to be holding well if we continue to grow earnings. And interest rates at 7.2% G-Sec, 10-year, we're not really expecting a big blowout from here. So as long as that spread is maintained, I think the focus remains on earnings growth.
Absolutely. Great. So I'll start to move away from all the macros. Some of the other things which one will continue to think about is the whole conversation around how the rains would be and the El Nino impact. I'm not asking question, but I'm just saying that this is something which is coming up. And then next 12 months, we have the general elections coming up. So these are some of the things I'm sure will be on the top of investors. But having said so, what I was wondering was, just to understand, now coming to markets that, bazaar kaisa lagta hai agle saal ke liye? एजी मंदी ऐसे ही रहेगा बिकॉज क्या हो रहा है कि 1000 पॉइंट अप 1000 पॉइंट डाउन वी वेंट टू 17 केम टू 18 सम न्यूज अगेन गो बैक टू 17 सो पीपल आर कंफ्यूज कि अभी करना क्या है मतलब सी इफ यू सी द डोमेस्टिक फ्लो स्टिल वेरी स्ट्रॉन्ग वी हैव गॉट द म्यूचुअल फंड नंबर फॉर द लास्ट मंथ 20,000 क्रोर्स पॉजिटिव फॉर इक्विटीज आई थिंक द एसआईपी फ्लो इज सस्टेन्ड एफआईआई लास्ट मंथ वाज पॉजिटिव 14,000 क्रोर्स दिस मंथ सो फार इज आई थिंक 2-3,000 ऑड क्रोर्स So domestic has pulled on and they've been patient for 18 months with no returns. So when will the foreigners come back and irrespective of that, how does market look?
And your question is what?
I thought again you froze up Shankar, but Anup, let's start with you.
Oh, I thought you'd get the better answer from Shankar here. He's already told you his view.
We'll take it 10 seconds. We'll have a long answer.
When Shankar is there on the panel, obviously everything starts with him. So,
to be honest, we don't take year by year views, Akhil, because I think it's a bit of a mug's game. if you look at volatility on average in a year, it's almost impossible for anyone to consistently predict where markets will be 1 year from now. So it's really not paid out very well. Having said that, our working assumption is with base earnings growth coming through, we'd be more positively inclined. I mean, the only thing going slightly against us is the fact that valuations are a little ahead of what averages are tended to be long term, whereas globally people are hoping for cheaper valuations that they're seeing in most other places.
This is so on that the is forward the, basis,
the even on a forward basis. I mean, the only resistance, let me put it, the only resistance that we get when we talk to a lot of clients internationally, institutions, etc. The only, I mean, everybody understands the India story. It's very difficult to be negative on India, frankly. But it all finally boils down to valuation is a bit expensive. Now, valuations have been expensive in individual stocks for a long, long time. But at a market level also, right now, it's a bit slightly above. So anyway, the way we're looking at it is, again, I'm not taking a one-year view, but over the course of the next 3 years, I think we're continue to be very positive because markets are not too far away from average. It may consolidate for a while and then move up, or it may move up and then, we don't know which way it goes, but I think point to point over a 3 year period, I think we're quite positively inclined with earnings coming through. And at least we still believe it's better than fixed income to be, I mean, that's the immediate comparable asset class.
Sure.
So that view doesn't change, that remains.
Any thoughts on flows, domestic flows, international flows, with your conversations with domestic, international investors?
Yeah, I think, global flows, I think international flows will come. It will eventually come because even though people don't feel, I mean, it's on the fence as far as valuations are concerned right now, but there's nothing like a bit of a move to bring everybody back in and to change their minds. So I think flows are more keen to come. We've had, frankly, if you look again since 93, when we opened up for foreign flows and you take this last 30-year period and you look at the odds every year of a positive versus negative inflow, you know, there's a 70% chance of a positive inflow and a 30% chance of a negative inflow. So we'd be more inclined to think we'll have a positive flow over time. And domestic flows will, you're right, it's been no outcome for the last 18 months, but the way equities move is it takes 12 months to cover up for a fairly long period. So
everyone
has to just be patient. Yeah,
we've seen that in 21.
Yeah.
So yes, Shankar boss, tell me, sir.
नहीं सवाल क्या है बॉस?
सवाल मार्केट्स में ही था कि इस साल आपका क्या व्यू है, पॉजिटिव है, नेगेटिव है, ओवरऑल जनरली व्हाट डू यू सेंस?
I tell you, at GQ, we keep doing a lot of strategies, a lot of experiments, a lot of testing. So last year, when the Ukraine war started, Russia-Ukraine war started, which was, I think, in February or March. And then the markets obviously slid a fair bit and they fell all the way up till, I think, first week of June. And in that period, you know, I made a portfolio, actual money, you know, not some paper thing. And I said, ki chalo yaar, is strategy pe kuch dalte hain, that's it. I think 15-18 stocks ka portfolio banaya, you know, and you know, we kind of completed 1 year of that, and I was reviewing the results and I was really pleasantly surprised that in a market that has been more or less flat from that point till now, you know, I think it's like some 80% return or something, of which I think, you know, maybe 20-25% of the stocks were down or exited. But on I think a good 40-50% up, like 200, you know, percent and stuff like that, and still going strong, and balance were like middling. I mean, ye to yaar matlab is tarah ke aapko opportunities are irrespective. Markets have been flat, and if I can build a portfolio making me 80%, you know, I don't think there is anything more I need to say about the quality of opportunities in India. I mean, I just had a call with another company, which is, you know, obviously way away from being even a mid-cap. I mean, I was astounded, you know, great numbers, good growth, guy sold out, guy doesn't have capacity. You know, and still it's like, I think barely nudging the double-digit, you know, PE multiple, you know, 25%, 30% return on equity. Oh, yeah, is tarah ki to aapko matlab main to bolta hu, 50 कंपनियां मिल जाएंगी आपको. तो फिर what is all this debate about whether India valuation is stretched or not stretched? I think the problem is that, you know, these foreign investors and, you know, I've dealt with them a very, very long time. You know, they just have a blind metric or something called the PE ratio. And irrespective of what underlies the PE ratio, which is obviously the, to look at PE ratio in terms of what the constituents are of the PE ratio, a blind number hota hai ki ji, Russia mujhe yaad hai, aaj se, maybe in the 90s also, it was always a cheap market. Wo 5-6 time pe trade karta tha. India was always expensive. I think wo hi 12, 15, 18 ke time mein. Everything, Russia lenge aur India nahi lenge. And then 98 crisis happened, jisme ki wo sab barbaad ho gaya. India still weathered that Asian crisis very well. I mean, you know, this kind of really very superficial level of research that a very top-down PE multiple, aisa dekhke, I mean, I'm always astounded how money is allocated on these kinds of superficial basis. I think a domestic investor, people like Anoop and his ilk are far smarter, far more sophisticated than a lot of these macro people sitting in New York and elsewhere. So I'm not even interested in knowing whether they'll put money or not. If they don't, it's their problem, really speaking. You know, I think irrespective of their flows, India has done reasonably well. And I think irrespective of whether they come or not, India will do well as a market. I have absolutely no doubt in mind. If they don't come, it's their loss. It's really speaking not India's loss in any way.
Sure. Yeah, at least Indians are coming in. So that's not a worry. We are all investing. So the other thing comes to mind is these questions are really cropping up increasingly every day is due to certain market characteristics, a lot of active managers, all of you all are active managers, we are also active managers out here, tend to go through this phase of underperformance. Markets have been polarized last year. Some parts of the markets have done well, largely underowned by active managers. So how should one read into this whole, momentary or transitionary underperformances, not get too much panicky? And do you think that this going forward should get tilted towards alpha and outperformance by active managers? Anoop?
Yeah, no, I continue to believe it's a very strong alpha market for the reasons I gave you right at the start, which is, you know, when you have a fair number of companies that you can participate in with compounding capability, then it's really about just being sensible enough to choose and not make any big mistakes. And you can deliver. The more you go closer and hug the index, the less your chance of actually outperforming and maybe even underperforming start rising. So we've been active. I mean, we've been outperforming for a sort of decent track record of alpha. So I think it's there with a fair number of managers have been able to demonstrate alpha even in this market. You're right, there are quite a few who've not been also able to, and that could be transitory. But India is an alpha market, make no mistake on that. We've got scalable businesses, good return on capital characteristics, good managements to be able to participate in. And as you go down the market cap chain, you know, it's always surprises me how many new entrepreneurs we come across who look really interesting and have great scalable businesses that they can build. So India is a land of entrepreneurship. I think that's the biggest strength for India. And whenever you have companies like that, I think, you know, alpha is around the corner.
No, great. So, I think the audience, I'm sure, will get much confidence that we are active. We are a market which can deliver alpha and outperformance, and active managers can identify many businesses outside the index to deliver great outperformances. So I think momentarily it could happen, but in longer term, I think India is the alpha market. But so going to Shankar, I know your answer what it will be. But if somebody is building a portfolio today between large cap, mid cap, small cap, how should one really allocate portfolio, let's say from a 3-year perspective, what should be large cap, how much large cap, how much mid, how much small? I'm sure you would be 100% small, but for an average investor, that small caps have been beaten down, discounted.
Actually, you know, you'll be surprised, Akhil. I mean, people talk about mid caps or small caps being beaten down. I was आई मीन आई नो अ नंबर ऑफ स्टॉक्स एंड सम ऑफ देम फॉर्चुनेटली आई ओन, वो घटते ही नहीं है बॉस, चाहे कुछ भी हो जाए मार्केट को. अभी यार कोई चीज अगर 150 जाके वो 140 होता है और इंडेक्स इज सो बैड एंड ऑल ऑफ दिस प्रॉब्लम, आई मीन आई थिंक इट्स अ, इतना भी अगर 5-10% का लॉस है, 20% में बोलता हूँ अगर आप बर्दाश्त नहीं करते, तो व्हाट्स द पॉइंट ऑफ बीइंग इन इक्विटी मार्केट. सो द गुड कंपनीज हैव नॉट फॉलन इवन इन दिस, आई एम टॉकिंग द स्मॉल कैप एंड ऑफ द मार्केट, इवन इन दिस फेयरली प्रॉब्लमैटिक स्ट्रेच ऑफ टाइम. सो आई थिंक आई मीन आफ्टर डूइंग दिस फॉर 30 इयर्स, इट्स नॉट डिफिकल्ट टू बिल्ड अ पोर्टफोलियो ऑफ 25-30 नेम्स. And today the fortunate thing is that for most individual investors, they are far more knowledgeable than we used to be back in our day, because of obviously the internet wasn't there. And you know, there are apps, there are screeners, there are tools, you know, you have AI now, which is very strong, which can level the playing field between professional and retail investors if you use it wisely. So a lot of that can be used by small guys to really close the gap between professionals and the amateurs. And answer your question, 25-30 stocks a company hona chahiye in your portfolio. I mean, I believe the larger the portfolio, the better it is. I don't believe in concentration at all. I think that's a myth peddled by a lot of money managers, and I don't think there is the adequate data to support that it works. To my mind, it is like the marathon race. You start out with a big bunch of runners. After about 5 miles, you will see the field thin out a bit. There'll be the laggards, there'll be the midfield, and then there'll be the leaders. And you keep reallocating capital from the laggards into the mid and the leaders. I mean, that's the way even the smallest guy can do a fairly good job of investing. So, I mean, you know, like I said, build your screener tools, look at all the ratios that, and the good thing is, Akhil, ultimately is business mein ratio 4-5 hi dekhne wale hote hain. हम उसको जितना मर्जी सोफिस्टिकेटेड बना दे, देखना सबको वही रिटर्न कैपिटल, कैश फ्लो, रिटर्न इक्विटी, प्राइस टू अर्निंग, प्राइस टू बुक, प्राइस टू सेल्स, यही 5-7 ही चीजों देखना है आपको मोटा मोटा. आप बाकी मैनेजमेंट छोड़ो, मैनेजमेंट क्या करती नहीं करती, नंबर्स में ही सब कुछ उसका कैरेक्टर नजर आ जाता है आपको. तो आप 80% कंपनियां ले लो जो सस्ती है, 20% थोड़ा रिस्की कंपनियां लो. इन माई व्यू आई ऑलवेज से 20% और सो यू शुड एलोकेट टू यू नो थिंग्स विच कैन बी लाइक अ 20x-er. But obviously, कोई 20x की चीज आपको on day one will not find it to be beautiful and smelling like roses. It will not be. You will not right. find great trading at one time book value. It's not going to happen. So allocate a bit to the risk end. 80% should be in decently valued companies, but decent numbers. Build a 25 stock portfolio. I can tell you 12 months from now, you will be doing far better than, you know, even the ETFs tracking the Indian markets. As I told you, this example of just what we did last year till today, I mean, the index is about flat and that little portfolio is up 80%. I mean, easy to make money, boss. Not a problem.
Sure. So, Anup, how would you put this across for a moderate risk investor, 3-year perspective, large, mid, small? What should be the allocation strategy, or go with a flexi cap fund?
Yeah, I mean, see, again, there's no obvious answer. It's really a function of what valuations are in each of these groups. And it finally, it boils down to the stocks. I mean, if we keep coming back to that point, which is finally is the stocks that you buy. You can make money off a large cap. You can make money off a small cap as well. But yeah, I think in that sense, maybe a flexi cap, like you mentioned, Akhil, is sensible, because that just gives, if you're allocating to a fund manager has the flexibility to figure out where the value is, where the ideas are, irrespective of whether they're coming from whichever of these buckets, and build them in the portfolio. So no point trying to be over cute on allocation there. I think just give it to a general flexi cap approach.
Yeah. Why I was asking about this question was that I was just seeing some data where, again, it is at the headline level. Unfortunately, we cannot talk about stocks and individual businesses, etc. So we are just talking at the macro level. But what I was seeing that in last 18 months, small cap index is now at 17% discount to Nifty 50. So, I mean, that pot has not made anything for the last 5 years, actually. In between, 21 was good, and then it went down once again. Mid cap has come down from 21% premium to 15%, and then you have Nifty where it is. So, from that perspective, I thought that small and mids from a 3-year, 5-year perspective probably could be overweight types. So that's where this question was actually popping up from, but completely accept your views. So so my next question is, again, a lot discussed is, last year has been all about value. Low PE stocks have done extremely well. High PE stocks have not done well. So will this continue into this year, or you see that growth also will come back? Maybe we can start with Anoop first, and then we can go to Shankar also.
Sure. Okay. I'll give you a generic answer because it's again generic question. So, so what we've seen these periods where some stocks get very, very cheap, and then there's a normalization. So, sort of mean reversion of some sort does tend to happen in valuations from time to time when they get either too expensive or too cheap on either side. Again, it depends on the business, but it does tend to happen when things move to extremes. I think we're in a stage now where it's very even Stevens now. You know, you can't, a lot of the very high priced, you know, high P multiple stocks have corrected quite significantly, and there are some good quality names there.
Yes.
All the value names have moved up as well. And therefore, I would say it's a lot more balanced now. And, you know, there's no dramatic benefit of being one side or the other to speak. I think you need to just focus on your companies. Buying growth, buying companies at reasonable prices is normally the way to go. And that's what, you know, we all try and do. So I don't think, yeah, any extreme of style is necessarily going to produce exceptional returns right now.
Yeah. We tend to extrapolate what happened with in the recent past into the future. So I thought to get a clear answer. Shankar, any thoughts from your side in terms of value versus growth?
No, so I would rather say risk versus a low risk, to say where, what bucket at least I am looking at. I am completely on the risk on mode from the last, I think, a month and a half or so. My sense is by maybe September quarter or so, you will start to get a reversal of the hawkish stances given by most central banks. And, you know, that, so I want to be ahead of that trade rather than, you know, be on that trade when the trade happens. I'm very bullish on the NASDAQ. I'm very bullish on tech. I think it's like a unbelievable opportunity there. And therefore, if I extrapolate it down to India, you should be buying risk. You should not be buying value, because the value trade, I think, has run its course. When the rate reversals really begin to come in, you want to be well positioned ahead of that happening. So buy risk. I mean, that's my strategy. Could be wrong. I mean, that's part of the game. But I am completely.
Can you explain a little bit on the risk side? I mean, risk as in, what are you trying to say?
What I'm saying is, I mean, there is always a risk on trade and a risk off trade. Last year was a risk off year, more or less, right? Because obviously, all the problems from that aspect. So,
understood.
Was badly hit, and you know, everywhere, you know, anything to do with risk, which means that companies with, let's say, less than very solid earnings, etc. You know, in India, you saw many stocks fall 50-80%. US was crushed. US tech was crushed. You know, I think that trade is going to come back. NASDAQ will be very strong, and if NASDAQ is strong, tech in India, or let's say the risk on trade in India, you have to find which ones are those. I mean, I'm not going there, but you find stocks rallying very, very strongly, which got beaten down last year. I think the alpha is there rather than by the safety of the value trade, which worked well last year. I don't think it's going to work this year.
Yeah. I think Anoop, you have to leave at 5:30, I believe, right?
I just wanted to check on that. Anoop, you have a flight to catch or something?
No, we have a, we in fact, we have a call with one of our institutional investors. So,
okay.
I should clip Shankar's clip from here and just post it over there.
Would you want to spend 2-3 minutes, or you would want to move ahead?
I have a couple of minutes if you want to get any questions.
So basically, I'll take the last question. I mean, just taking cue from what Shankar spoke. So obviously, you're managing portfolios. Which would be the sectors you would be bullish upon from a 3-year perspective, not from short-term perspective, but which are the sectors you would go overweight, which are the sectors you would try and be underweight, and maybe if you can explain why or reasons for that.
Sure. So, okay, before I get into that, so two sectors are very important for India in particular, financials and IT. These two sectors are very important for the simple reason that if you look at the BSE 500 companies and you take out the total salary bill of BSE 500 companies, it's a little over 9 lakh crores. And these two sectors account for 50% of that. And therefore, this sort of consumption story of India is partly also linked to how these two sectors are performing. And obviously, they also make up almost 50% of the market cap. So pretty important sectors to get right in a portfolio. The good news is, I guess, financials is still in a very, we're in a very nice phase at the moment, balance sheet wise, growth wise. And, you know, generally speaking, we are still in a very early phase of financialization, credit, et cetera. So there's a fair amount of growth that's visible. So by default, financials would always be the largest sector in most portfolios, and that would be one name, one sector automatically that would be part of it. And IT, though, is looking a little more modest right now. Indian IT services, maybe for a year, there's a bit of an air pocket, but that might be a good opportunity somewhere down the road. Besides that, some of the other areas we like, I'd say pharma has been a tough sector, frankly, but right now valuations are looking interesting. So just keeping an eye out if there's any catalyst. Cement looks interesting as a good domestic sector, and especially heading into an election year and beyond, there's a good consolidation there as well. And then beyond that, it's really picking individual businesses, and there's just a large variety of subsectors that one can look at. So these are just top of the head, some of the key areas. Yeah.
Any new emerging like defense and, you know, a lot of these new themes are also coming up. Like defense for manufacturing, infrastructure.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah. Manufacturing. Yeah. So those would be sort of spread across a whole bunch of areas. So let's say components and, you know, electronics, and you have all these companies that have been involved in assembling and exporting, etc. But you know, some of these others, like defense, has already done very well last year. It's still a structural theme, but obviously now you're beginning to pay, you have to pay a price for it, so it's not as obvious. In parts of manufacturing, I think that's another key element for India to really break out in a way. You know, just I'll spend a minute on this because since the topic was on risks, but we've sort of, as you can see, we are more positive than the risks. But, you know, the one risk India has had historically, the challenge, and this is just tying the bit of the macro and this manufacturing is, you know, historically we've had, whenever we've pushed on GDP growth, our current account deficit has also expanded. Somehow we've not been able to manage both together. And whenever the current account deficit expands, then it puts pressure on the currency, it puts pressure on interest rates, and that again goes back to hurt you a bit on growth. To our mind, the big gap in that CAD is largely because of the gap of manufactured exports that isn't there to its true potential. And if we get this manufacturing story right, I think India addresses a lot of problems, even from a macro standpoint. If your current account deficit is more manageable because of your exports, then it just allows growth to be much more secular, stable, at a lower interest rate, and without having to worry about rupee depreciation every year. So I think manufacturing is very, very important. Like, we've been very services driven, but I think this is a very important decade for India to make, it's a make or break in a way for manufacturing. So that, I think, will solve many macro as well as out of that will come a huge number of stock investment opportunities too.
But the recent data has come out pretty positive, right? $750 billion of export, and CAD also is now about $14
billion. CAD is under control.
That's if this continues, I think this pace continues, then it should be good.
Yeah.
Great. So maybe Anup, if you have a meeting, maybe,
you can carry on.
All right.
Take my- Thank you. Thanks so much. Thanks everyone who's
Thank
on
you.
The call.
Thank you, Anup. Nice talking to you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. See you, Shankar.
Thank you for your time,
Anup. So since only me, Vikas, you want to ask Shankar some questions?
Yeah, yes.
I think something more interesting for him.
Sure. So I remember Shankarji mentioning, you know, 2011-12, I think, gone on record saying that this decade belongs to US. And I remember I was watching one of the shows in TV and it just, I was recollecting that. So Shankarji, do you think you have a similar views for India for this decade, or और यू थिंक दैट लास्ट 30-40 इयर्स द सेम स्टोरी विल कंटिन्यू? इंडिया हमेशा ही अच्छा लगता है, अच्छा लगता है, अच्छा लगता है, लेकिन ना बढ़ नहीं पाता है, ऐसा है?
नहीं, विकास, एक्चुअली यू नो द डेटा दैट 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 इज रियली आई पॉपिंग इज के अगर आप लास्ट 30 इयर्स का डेटा देखें तो US is far and away the best performing equity market. Okay, far and away. But the second best equity market, I'm talking dollar returns, is India. तो मतलब हम जय और वीरो दोनों ही ठीक है, इसमें इतना कोई लड़ाई करने की जरूरत ही नहीं है. आप दोनों जगह पर अपना पैर रखें. एंड आई थिंक somebody before was also alluding to the fact that it's never going to be a smart thing to do an all or nothing thing. Today you can buy Nasdaq sitting in India also. You can buy obviously India sitting in India. So I don't think you have to really, you know, get into a struggle over whether it is US or whether it is India. US remains a great market. Without any doubt, it's all in a way like India, great bottom up opportunities, irrespective of what kind of macro exists. You know, there are any number of great companies there. And I can tell you the small caps in the US also look just amazing. I mean, we do a lot of work there. एंड जैसे इंडिया में इस तरह कंपनियां निकालते हैं, यूएस में मिलती हैं. एंड अगेन ऑन अ 25 स्टॉक पोर्टफोलियो आई थिंक आई कैन मेक यू नो डबल माय मनी ऑन दैट इन अ इयर्स टाइम. सो अगेन दीज आर टू ग्रेट कंट्रीज, टू ग्रेट मार्केट, वेरी सिमिलर डेमोक्रेसीज, यू नो वाइड इक्विटी कल्चर, ग्रेट नंबर ऑफ बॉटम अप स्टॉक, यू नो स्टॉक्स अवेलेबल. मैक्रो हैज बीन डॉजी इन द यूएस फॉर अ लॉन्ग टाइम, वेरियस थिंग्स, बट वॉरेन बफेट हैज बिकम वेरी रिच, यू नो, थ्रू आउट ऑल दैट पीरियड. सो हैव literally hundreds of other investors. So India is in that way very similar. We have endured all kinds of problems from the time I have entered the markets. But from where we started, all of us become significantly wealthy. So aisi koi baat nahi hai ki aapko choose karna hai. Dono jagah thoda thoda, depending on what looks better, thoda sa pie chart aap allocation mein change kar sakte hain. But I don't think we have to fight over which one is better. I think both are great equity markets without any doubt.
Right. So the second question is, you know, apart from India, which are the other countries you think is equivalent in terms of giving or throwing the similar sort of opportunities in next 5-7 years time? Because you track the entire global markets, and so yeah. I take the liberty of asking you.
So I last year I made two significant bets. Apart from, of course, India, US are always there in the portfolio. Whether you know bottom up honge, kabhi index honge, jo bhi honge. But I made two away from these two countries bets. One was Turkey, which I bought, I think, in August, September last year. And, you know, I bought the ETF and it had already, I think, gone up 30% from the time I had bought it. I think lows were around $21-$22 and I bought, I think, at $26-$27, something like that. And from there up until the point of the recent earthquake, which was very unfortunate and a massive human calamity, that $26-$27 had become $37.5 in a matter of 6 months' time. I mean, that is a 40% return in an index, in dollar terms, by the way. From there, it has corrected, but even today, whatever I checked, it was about 34.5. So, you know, it's been a fantastic investment by any stretch, because I like to, as I said, okay, up safety low, beshak, you know, you have 70-80% of your portfolio in good names, good companies. But 20%, we are in the business of buying risk here. We are not in the business of just buying HDFC and forgetting about it. Uske kya maja hai? Fir woh to bahut boring kaam ho jayega na. Fir life mein thoda spice bhi hona chahiye, thoda kick hona chahiye, thoda thrill hona chahiye. Uske liye hum Turkey khareedte hain. Uske liye kabhi kabhi ye sab faltu ki companies jo paper pe lagti hain, ki faltu hain, ho sakta hai usse badi opportunity. So Turkey is that kind of country. Aap kisi se baat kar lete. सब कहते हैं फालतू है, थर्ड क्लास है. मेरे वेरी क्लोज फ्रेंड ऑफ माइन हुज़ अ ग्लोबल इन्वेस्टर आसी बोले पागल है क्या तू, तेरे को और कुछ मार्केट नहीं मिला क्या, तुमको टर्की क्यों लेना है. एंड ही हैज बीन इन्वेस्टिंग फॉर 30 इयर्स ग्लोबली, रन्स अ बिग फंड. एंड आई सेड ठीक है यार, चलो आई विल पुट इन सम मनी. एंड यू नो नाउ ही टेल्स मी यार कमाल हो गया तुमने साला, इधर बैठे बैठे दुबई में बैठ के तुमने टर्की पकड़ लिया. मैंने कहा यार तुम लोग क्या है, यू आर टू जेडेड, यू आर लुकिंग एट इट इन अ वेरी स्टैंडर्डाइज मैनर. माई जॉब इज टू लुक एट थिंग्स दैट पीपल हेट. So Turkey was a good bet, and then Mexico has been the other very, very good bet that I made, again out of luck, because my broad thinking was that while and Anup was talking about India's manufacturing resurgence, In part, that is because, in fact, in large part, that is because of China's problem. Meaning China has itself created self-goal after self-goal after self-goal in the last 3 years since COVID. You know, uske pehle unhone tech pe clampdown kiya, that created a big fear psychosis. Then they got into, you know, this whole problem with basically COVID, and there is a huge theory that they engineered COVID and it was not really just a natural problem. And then, of course, trade wars chali raha tha from the time Trump had become president. And then, of course, the world decided that we've had enough of China. We want to move it out of China. And Vietnam became a beneficiary. And India, of course, being a large country with large manpower, will be a beneficiary for sure. But in my view, the biggest beneficiary is going to be Mexico. Because the US is clear, it doesn't want China. It wants to actually, literally, if I can use the word, kill China. Okay? In every way possible. You know, even if it means, you know, there are hostilities at some point in the future. So, manufacturing, hamare paas aa raha hai, we are feeling good. But the real thing is going to be in Mexico. Because that's right in their backyard, you know, logistically very accessible. A country very pliant to American, hegemony. And, that was my broad thesis. Nearshoring will be also become a huge factor. And actually, if you look at Mexico, I mean, it's trading at all-time highs. It's been a fantastic market in the last 6-8 months' time. So outside of India and the US, my two bets that have worked very well on the macro basis have been Mexico and Turkey. And I still continue to like them.
Yeah. Any thoughts on China? Before that, I think China pe kuch hai, thoughts aapke? I mean, China also, I mean...
China will become... I think China should not be written off. It's still a huge market, huge economy, again in a lot of senses, bottom up, wahan bhi bahut opportunities milti hain. There will be obviously problems of opacity. They're not as transparent as Indian accounting or US accounting for that matter. But I don't have any capital invested in China, if that's your question. But you know, obviously, we will keep being very, very interested in a market like that. You cannot ignore it.
Sure. Yeah, Vikas.
Yeah, my last question, Shankar ji, geopolitically kya chal raha hai sir? Thoda sa isko aap postmortem kariye na, in the sense that every day you turn on the TV and then you see all these news coming in, world war hoga, ye hoga. Ab to aapko lagta hai ye sab kuch hoga aisa?
Yaar Vikas, dekho aisa hai ki aisa, this is above our pay grade, okay? So iske liye wahi bol raha hu ki world war hoga, aap log sab mar jayenge, theek hai, abhi kya kar sakte iske bare mein? I mean, the fact of the matter is, ultimately, there are things that you cannot forecast. You know, I can forecast a fair bit in the stock market. That much I know. I can forecast a fair bit in macro. But can I forecast ki yaar China Taiwan ko kab attack karega? I mean, wo kya malum hai kab karega? Karega ki nahi karega? Aur kaise karega? Uske samne mein fir US ke saath kya hoga? India kaun se side baithega? Because Russia will obviously side with China. You know, where India will be placed in this whole thing? Ab kahan tak ye sab cheezon mein ghuste rahenge? You know, it's really impossible. And isliye maine, by the way, matlab main TV dekhta hi nahi hu, just for your information. So I would strongly recommend aap hi na dekho. Your life will be far more sorted.
True, sir. True. Over to you, Akhil.
I think I'm done with all my questions. And as usual, I think we got very simple answers to very difficult and complex subjects. We often try to make it, and I hope as always, the wisdom of Anoop and Shankar, we missed Bharat Bhai, will help all the audience out here, investors, to understand that eventually it is about, India looks good. India offers good opportunities. It is about stock picking. It is about bottom up and long term. And, just keep investing, keep allocating and stay for long term. And if you cannot do it on your own, then people like Shankar and all of us are all here out here to support you. So I'm done. Thank you so much, Shankar. It was a pleasure.
Vikas is there. He's a great.
Vikas is the biggest aggregator, I think. Beautiful platform created.
Yes, great. Great show, yeah, Vikas.
Absolutely. So congratulations, Vikas. Thank you for this. It was a pleasure to be the title partner with you and support you with your first conference. And look forward to many more. And obviously, it's an honor to talk to Shankar all the time whenever we get an opportunity. Look forward to many more sessions. So, best wishes.
Right. Thank you, Shankar, for your time. As always, always wonderful speaking with you. The way you simplify things for our investors. Thank you so much.
Thank you
Thank
very
you
much.
So much. Thank
Thanks,
you.
Guys.
Thanks, Akhil. Thanks. Yeah. Bye.
Bye, Vikas.